podcast for heroes in the world of Overwatch. This is The Payload.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of The Payload. We are an Overwatch podcast from blitzpro.com, centered out of Denver, Colorado. I am John Horseman, and with me, of course, is the crew, first from Ventura, California. It is Jimmy Bloxham. Hey, Jimmy.
Hey, so good to be back here again talking about Overwatch. It's been another week of it being live, so I'm really excited to dig into some news here and calm everyone down from freaking out about competitive mode not coming out until July.
Right. I mean, to be fair, you've turned yourself into quite the celebrity this past week, Jimmy.
I've been busy. I've been schmoozing and at Agents Rising, I finagled my way onto the desk there to promote this show. So thank you, those of you joining us that heard about the show at Agents Rising, for checking out. Really, really appreciate it.
Yeah, that's so cool. That was really cool to see you up there. I watched the VOD at least a couple of times. So neat. Good for you, man. That's awesome. From Saskatoon, Canada, it's everyone's favorite, Kevin Obdestad. Hey, Kev.
It's good to be back, John. And yeah, it's crazy to have seen Jimmy up there, up talking us. You know, that's pretty incredible. So it's gonna be a good show. There's lots to talk about. Overwatch is in a really good place right now. I think the excitement is still very palpable. I don't know. Everybody I talk to is thrilled with the game, top to bottom, front to back. I hear nothing but excitement, people looking forward to what's yet to come. People are online on the game every day in huge swaths. Like, it dwarfs all of the other Blizzard properties on my friends list, at least, which is incredible. Oh, yeah. Really.
Mm-hmm. I think the only negative I've heard is mostly from people trying to play the game solo. And I think that's just that's unfortunately the difficult part of Overwatch, is trying to play solo. I don't think I've played a single game not partied up, and the game has been an absolute blast.
You know, though, that's a serious thing. Like, most of the people I've talked to who have, if they have a complaint about the game, is that they don't play by themselves because it's not as much fun. A lot of people who are maybe new to the game or the genre are unwilling or unable to coordinate in some ways, and that can be frustrating to play with. I've played a little bit by myself on console. And it's just not the same experience, for sure. It's this game, I think, more than any other Blizzard game, really is heavily dependent on the social factor.
Yeah, it definitely, I love playing Overwatch. I have no inclinations at all playing on my own. I really don't. It's not even like, I'm going to sit down and play a couple games by myself. I go on, and if anyone's on, I'm going to see if they're partied up, or usually I'll be playing Hearthstone and someone will be like, you want to play Overwatch? That's when I go over there. And when I'm playing by myself, I'm playing Hearthstone. And I found that's kind of the best way to do it. I did get up to rank 27 this week though, so that was pretty good. Got some good playing time in. Played with Pat Crane, who we've got this modulator thing on our voices where we can put our voices up to like really chipmunk high level like super, super low, sexy Barry Manilow type stuff. Barry Manilow, is that the guy with the low voice? Either way. we were doing that, which is a lot of fun on stream, and just kind of, you know, hanging out and doing that. So had a lot of fun this week. And should we just jump into the news? Should we just go for it?
Let's do it. There's so much.
This week in Overwatch.
Since you ever interrupt my girlfriend like that again, Jimmy, you get that? That's strike two.
It's the remix. This week in Overwatch.
This week. Oh, man, we got some big news. But the biggest news of them all is Overwatch hit 7 million players in the first 9 days of launch. I think that kind of warrants big applause.
That's a big deal, right? Like,
yeah, the really long one.
Yeah.
That's
right, though.
That's a pretty big deal. Oh man, you ever get a feeling that you need to sneeze? So you want Kevin to talk more about 9.7 or 7 million 9 days?
Absolutely. So I guess the number to me is interesting for a couple of reasons, right? They reported it as players, not copies of the game sold, which I actually really like, because if you look at your profile online, for example, I have one unified profile that shows both my PC and Xbox stats. So I am one player, despite the fact that I actually bought two copies of the game. And they could have gone for the overreported statistic and just said, oh, yeah, we sold 12 million copies of Overwatch or whatever. But they didn't. And I really like that. I think it's indicative of the fact that they really want to speak to the size of the playing audience, right? Not how many copies got sold, how many boxes are getting moved, because that was such a big deal. It was such a like core metric once upon a time, but it's not anymore. The thing that matters is how many people are actually logged into your game. The other variable too that it takes into account, and this one I really want to harp on for just a second, and then I'll toss it back to you guys.
Harp away. But I wish I had a harp sounder. That'd be kind of cool.
It really, really emphasizes the importance of how big Overwatch is in Asia right now. So the big statistic that I saw on Twitter this week was that Overwatch has broken 20% of market share in South Korea. So most of the people who are playing games in that market don't actually own games. They play them in LAN cafes. We don't have to actually own the game outright. You just jump in and you have the ability to play whatever games and you pay for access time. And Blizzard has had to totally modify their licensing structure to allow for that in markets like that. Overwatch is the first game that has threatened to push League of Legends to less than 30% market share in almost 3.5 years, which is a huge deal when you think that League of Legends overtook StarCraft once upon a time way back in like 2011, 2012. Mm-hmm. And it has just stayed there since. Nothing has even touched it. And all of the other Blizzard properties are in the like 2% range, right? StarCraft, Diablo, World of Warcraft, they're all just non-existent. But Overwatch is just massive out the gate. And I'm really blown away by that.
Yeah, that's what I was going to mention too, is that Blizzard has really struggled to find success in South Korea, in that market, that structure there that you were talking about. And them hitting this 20% mark for Overwatch already just speaks volumes about this game already. And I don't know if you guys had caught it, but I guess the opening weekend there was a giant like event in South Korea. I was watching it on Twitch, and it was just like a giant stadium, and they had show matches. I think they were with just like some celebrities or something. I don't know. It was much better than the launch we got here, I'd have to say.
I'm just blown away at how big it is. Like, obviously, the question now is, will that momentum be sustained? But all signs at this point totally point to yes, which is incredible, not just for this game, but for Blizzard as a whole. Like, it really, if you think about Blizzard's traditional pattern, right, I don't think it'll be very long before we see some very serious cross promotion between Overwatch and the other Blizzard titles. Right. That's been historically a huge part of how Blizzard introduces people to other games in their family. Right. And I imagine we'll see that before the summer's out.
You mean beyond like Tracer in Heroes and the Widowmaker skin and the Overwatch, yeah, like even going more? Like, what do you think that looks like? Or just more of that?
No, but like think back to Blizzard did that thing where you could unlock a card back in Hearthstone if you got a certain number of games played or to a certain level in Heroes of the Storm. They made it so that if you got to a certain level in World of Warcraft, you got an alternate hero in Hearthstone. Like, I think crossover stuff like that is definitely going to happen.
I totally agree. I think you're right on. Go ahead.
I was just going to say the one thing I think you overlooked a little bit was that it debuted at number one on consoles in the UK. So, I mean, these 7 million players, they're from a variety of systems 80, here. I mean,
88%, right? Like from the numbers, 88% of this is UK, but mm-hmm. we're reporting purchases from console, either Xbox insane. One or PS4. So that's huge, all things considered. Now, obviously, that's not true sales. It was from, I think, retailers were reporting right. it, that's, so it's not directly from mortar. Blizzard, yeah. but. It definitely isn't going to not be something like that. Like, that means at least 75% are coming from those consoles. And that's, I think, being pretty generous. So that's huge. And I did a little poor man's math here. So as far as the most successful first week sales for a new franchise, it's $330 million, which is the Division, $325, which is the Activision Blizzard Destiny, $325 million. And then we got 7 million players. So that number technically has to be higher for games sold, correct? And so assuming that it's that, if the average gross sale is $47.15, it beats to be the best selling new franchise in the first week of all time, which is also a big deal. Now, again, that's kind of cheap depends, math, but
depends on some of those numbers like Korea and people who didn't actually have to buy licenses outright. But even still, I would be shocked if this isn't, I mean, A, one of the best new franchise launches of all time. B, I would hazard a guess that it probably displaces everything but Hearthstone for most played Blizzard title right now.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Blizzard talks about it all the time about how they really hit these ebbs and flows in their gameplay. They see, like, when Diablo has a new season, they see obviously the amount of players in that game spike pretty significantly, but now we're seeing Overwatch come out, so it's the new hot thing, and I think it's going to sustain for quite a while, because I mean, there's still stuff to come out, they're still teasing heroes and stuff like that, and also competitive coming out this month in June. We'll get more details about that soon, but yeah, it's just, I'm so excited for the amount of people playing this game. And when you think about it, what was it? 9.7 million players played in the open beta, and we have 7 million here playing in live. You've lost 3 million people? I mean, that's...
No.
lost, quote unquote.
This is in the first week.
Yeah, this is the first week, too. These are reported
players that have had the time to log into the game so far. There's no way. Like, statistically, historically, every game has exceeded its beta volume at some point within the first several months of actual release. Blizzard put this game out at kind of a weird time, like May. I guess you dodge college a little bit. You catch people who are out of summer, are out of school for the summer, but you don't have high school kids out of the school yet for the summer. You haven't had any major holidays or sales. Like, this game is going to grow enormously still.
Yeah, and it's also it is a full retail game too, which is kind of a little bit different as far as especially PC launch stuff goes. There's not as much as that.
It's not a free to play game for the first time in 5 years.
Right. So they're battling a little bit of that, but that's still huge. And the fact that 9.7 million players played it means that there's huge, huge interest in it. And there's probably a lot of people who haven't gotten around to playing it yet, or because again, that's just 7 million players have logged on and played. It doesn't actually say how many copies they sold. They could have, there's just so many variables at this point.
Having said all of that, we should maybe talk about the small handful of people who are not playing Overwatch. We saw just over 1,500 accounts permanently banned from Overwatch for different types of cheating and hacking. We're not going to get into what those cheats or hacks were or how to find them or any of the other details. Don't touch them. Don't cheat. It's a bad idea. And Blizzard, for the record, has been banning very aggressively on this. This is not your cute, you ran a shaman bot in Hearthstone and you get a month off and you lose some of your wins towards your gold portrait.
No, this is one strike and you're out.
This is permanent. And there are people who are reporting that they went out and bought a new license. So they bought a new copy of the game, reinstalled with a totally different code on a new account, and were banned again.
IP so Blizzard banned, is, it sounds like.
I mean, could be IP bans, could be they're using the same personal information and they're being looked at by name, could be any number of variables. At the end of the day, I mean, I don't care how they're tracking it, if it's IP, MAC address, or otherwise, they're serious about this and they do not want anything to compromise the integrity of the play experience online. Don't cheat. It's bad. You will get caught and you will get banned forever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm talking Blizzard to you, Widowmaker, I played last Thursday.
Blizzard gives you
freaking cheater.
Blizzard gives you cheats in games. I mean, wall hacks for Widowmaker and auto aim bot for Soldier 76. Why do you need cheats?
I don't want to talk about it. All right. Speaking of
cheaters,
some different heroes that may be a little overpowered without cheats, McCree is on the docket to see some potential nerfs. There's a lot of different things that are causing this to go out. I believe I got to remember who it was. Who it was that said they're looking at it. I always forget. I'm trying to pull it up right now. Jeff Goodman,
the designer. So,
they've been saying that they've been watching McCree carefully since release, and his flashbang plays an important role in being a strong option. It's also nice to prevent close range devastating abilities and ultimates, but it's probably a bit too good at dealing damage to higher health targets like tanks and barriers. He goes, I don't have any concrete changes yet, but I'm going to be testing some things internally and see how he plays. McCree also, we're going back and forth, depending on time, we might talk about this meta report that was posted, but McCree was seen often, I believe the percentage to be in the top tier is something insane. It's tier S. It's 100% heroes with greater than 100%. So which basically means that
at least present on
more,
both teams at
more
all times.
Than one at on both teams at all times. Or yeah. So that's kind of insane. Really used highly. So in the competitive, it's not just a lot of people are playing him around on the grinding out on quick play. It's that even competitive teams are favoring him heavily to win games. And so we will likely see some changes to McCree coming into the future. And I believe we're also maybe looking at, Kev, what were you going to say?
I was just going to touch real quickly on the McCree thing, because I think there's a lot of misinformation getting thrown around. So you'll recall, right, there was a balance patch back in mid-April, April 13th. They put out the patch that increased flashbang's duration and recovery time. So the stun lasts slightly longer, but it also takes slightly longer to reload before you can reuse the ability. A lot of people are saying they're unhappy with the flashbang, but it's very much Fan the Hammer that is being evaluated while they're looking at this. And Fan the Hammer, because a lot of people, again, don't know, does not deal headshot damage. It can't. So Fan the Hammer is only a problem right now because it just has the potential to burst down a lot of high health characters despite not getting any damage bonuses. So even if you don't, like a McCree with no backup from a Mercy, no backup from a Zenyatta, no other reason to be dealing excess damage, is still one rounding major high health characters. And I'm guessing what we're going to see is fan damage on a per bullet basis reduced, because it's just way too high right now, and it doesn't help that people are flashbanging, fanning, rolling and fanning again. And that right now is enough to, I think, mathematically kill just about anything in the game bar for certain interactions with armor.
Yeah, and that means he can just basically kind of counter the heroes that are supposed to counter him. Like Tracer, you want to use Tracer to kind of get in behind him, but you get caught out by the flashbang and fanned on, and you're done. You're completely done.
And that's important though, right? That's actually an intentional thing. Like that flashbang is one of the only ways to counter Tracer or Genji just running laps around your team, especially at a competitive level. It's one of the only things in the game that can reliably interrupt some of the ultimate abilities without actually killing someone. It's like that and things like Roadhog's hook and a couple of other very specific interactions. Like flashbang's not going anywhere, and I think is actually a very important part of his toolkit. His damage is just a little bit on the high side.
Well, in it's 35 to 70 points for Fan the Hammer per hit, right? Yeah. So you're talking on a full round, you're talking 6 shots at 35. I mean, that's already at least over 200. That's if you get the lowest amount of damage. So basically,
in the feet. Yeah.
Yeah. So you just start shooting him at the kneecaps and finish at his shoulders and you're okay. That's a lot of damage. And that's not even including if you're, you know, super, super close and you can get, you know, those 70 point shots. Like that's really devastating damage. So it definitely needs to be seen in or be taken a look at in some place. The other hero that we're taking a look at, though, is D.Va. Kev, tell us what's up with D.Va.
D.Va, not as significant because there's no sort of firm commitment at this point as to what, if any, change they might make there. The thread that brought it up was people talking about her damage being a bit low comparative to a lot of the other tanks. But Jeff Goodman turned around and said he's unlikely to actually increase her damage substantially because she's got so much mobility, right? And that's a huge factor in this game is mobility. It's probably the most important feature of any character is their ability to get around the map, and especially verticality. It's a huge factor. So what I think they're going to do is they want her to be able to like be more aggressive, initiate more effectively, but not end up as, in his words, a beefy flying assassin. So I don't think it'll actually be a damage change, but I'm glad they're aware that she's underplayed relative to the other tanks.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. And they did say, you know, damage probably isn't going to change or be anything significant, but D.Va's in kind of an interesting spot right now. I definitely know, and, you know, even our casual play, she really isn't performing very well. It doesn't feel like it just feels that, well, her mobility is a really nice thing, but the ability to push out and really commit isn't really that great. So I'm really interested to see how they're going to address D.Va going forward, because she is one of my favorite characters as far as conceptually with her background and her lore. I think that's such a huge, huge, cool character that they really need to make really enticing and playable, because it is such a cool story. So,
yeah, I tend to agree. I mean, they'll do something with her. I'm hopeful that it's not a massive change, but historically they've been pretty good in the last couple of balance patches about dialing those knobs pretty finely. So,
and last thing, and this was crazy. People were freaking out. They were absolutely freaking out about competitive play because the Play Overwatch Twitter actually tweeted out erroneously that competitive play was looking at coming for a patch in July rather than the end of June or late June is what Jeff Kaplan had said initially. And so, yeah, kind of a big deal. And don't worry though, it's coming back to June. It was a mistake. So it's coming back. So we don't have that long to wait. It's June. By the time we get to the end of this month, we'll be able to play in some competitive play.
Again, though, kind of amazing to me that like this was front page of Reddit. Everybody was losing their minds. Social media blew up like it was the 4th of July over what was effectively a typo. And I know that that's probably a good thing. It's indicative that there's a lot of people who want to play. They're very engaged. They're very particular about seeing competitive and the balance implications of having competitive play available. But I just couldn't believe the response, Jimmy.
Yeah, the response was pretty incredible. And what was funniest, I think, about it to me was that they had responded to this tweet with this date on like March or May 27th or 28th or something like that. And like no one had picked it up for till a few days ago. Yeah, days later. And then everyone just freaked out. I mean, even us at BlizzPro, we immediately put up a post. We're like, well, competitive is coming out in July. And then later on that day, they did clarify it is coming out in June. So everyone breathed a sigh of relief. And I'm excited just because this means as long as it does come out in June, which I fully expect it to, we're not going to see another situation like we've seen with Heroes of the Storm.
Yeah, well, and I mean, I think it's a testament to just, again, how engaged the audience is for this game. Like I was commenting in our Slack chat a couple days ago that the size and the speed at which the Overwatch subreddit moves and people talk about this game and all the different venues that are available is just unbelievable. It's one of the, I think, 25 now most active subreddits on the site in terms of the user to activity ratio. I put up a post advertising this episode tonight and the giveaway that we're doing for a copy of the Origins edition of Overwatch on PC later. And 15 minutes later, there were 70 new posts that had pushed it off. Like, it's just unbelievable. Yeah. So people just react at speed in this game right now. And I think a community that's that voracious is absolutely going to pick up on minor typos and stuff like that. But to see it on the front page of Reddit with 5,000 votes or something was kind of surreal to me.
Yeah. Sorry, I had to step away from my computer for a second because my girlfriend is addicted to Overwatch and she's been using my 7.1 Astro A50s, which I love, great headphones. But and they're
sponsored. What was that?
So you know, brought to you
where's
by
mine?
Brought to you by, right? I wish. And so
brought to you by John.
They she can't hear anything, but then she had the TV cranked up and it was bleeding through my microphone. So sorry if you heard that earlier. It was Katie playing Overwatch and just getting way too into it, not knowing that the TV sound was on as well as her headphone sound. But
that would actually be kind of okay, though. Like in the background, there's just Katie being like, "Goddamn son of a Genji," just like losing her mind.
Play of the game.
So I was streaming the other night, last night actually, and she actually did that. Because when I'm streaming, I usually leave my door open. So if Katie and I need to talk or anything like that, why would we need to talk, right? And so, you know, keeping the door of communication open, and out of the middle of nowhere, we're literally, you know, just playing a game. All of a sudden I hear a huge F-bomb and then stupid Genji. And I was like, yep, that's my girlfriend. That's my girlfriend. Goodness. She's the best. I love it. But man, she needs to learn how to counter that.
Sponsored by her too? Jeez.
Counter that Genji. All right, let's move on. Let's move on. Jimmy. Agents Rising, you were there, so you probably have the best handle on everything. How did it go? The first big Overwatch tournament post-launch. Well, I mean, ever, but obviously post-launch. How did it go?
It was really cool. I mean, seeing all these teams in the same venue and all these players in the same venue was really awesome. And I got to meet actually a lot of players who I'd actually run into on the beta, most notably Team Winky Face and Nibs, who's just an incredible McCree, and I think he played like 13 years of CS or something like that. So he's bringing that into Overwatch, and I got to just sit behind or stand behind him and watch him play during one of the matches, and just watching that in person is like something to really behold. I mean, it's very similar to like if you were to be able to stand behind a StarCraft player and watch them play, which is something incredible as well. But anyways, the tournament overall was really solid, and the scoring system, I still don't 100% understand how it worked, but it was a combination of stopwatch and points, and it seemed like the casters and the players really liked the way it was going. But I did see some confusion between teams on them still needing to finish out series where they thought they had lost, but they still had a chance to like tie it up and make it go to a tiebreaker. The only thing about it was it showed some glaring issues with Overwatch as an esport that I really hope will get fixed in the future. There's no replay system in the game, so all these games that were played off stream, no one's ever going to see them. They're lost to the void, so that's really unfortunate, but I imagine that's something Blizzard is working on, and hopefully we will see that kind of support going into the future. But as far as the tournament itself, the results are probably the least surprising results we've ever seen in a tournament. Cloud9 came out on top with Team Liquid, Gale Force, and Colorado Clutch behind them. So I think that's basically all the invited teams.
Those were all the invited teams. Yeah.
Which shouldn't really be a surprise, but there were a couple of matches that really they kind of got pushed a little bit. I mean, Cloud9 did... they did drop a couple matches. Team Liquid took three off of them in the grand finals. Colorado Clutch took one off of them as well. But yeah, Cloud9 just Cloud9 just looks super solid right now. And it really shows the difference between those who have had access to the closed beta and those who have not.
Yeah, it's I was really surprised because normally invite players do pretty well and invite teams do pretty well. But I mean, it was very handily head and shoulders. Those invite professional players were just head and shoulders above the others. I believe which team had little, I think his name was Jack, little Jack, 9 years old.
Let me look at that. I can find the team name,
but I thought that was so cool. He was playing with his dad.
Yeah. Optical Method Gaming.
Optical Method Gaming. Dude was pretty good. He could beat me for sure. So,
that's not a tall order, man. Come on now.
Come on.
Yeah, basically, if you missed it, there was this 9-year-old kid who was playing on stage with his family. His dad actually put this team together, and it was all their family members. and he was playing Mei on King's Row. They lost the map, but he got play of the game on this really just sick Mei ult, and everyone ended up voting for him, so he got the 12 upvotes during the cards at the score screen. And because of that, Esports Arena actually gave him an Overwatch backpack and Overwatch hat, which was really cool because they were like, hey, you got a really cool play of the game. Everyone upvoted you, so here you go. We're going to reward you on that. And he like totally lit up and smiled when he got that on the analyst desk there. And Rachel, it was so funny because Rachel talked to him. She's like, so you got to like tell your friends at school that you played Overwatch like professionally? He's like, no. It was just really funny. But yeah, the future of esports is bright if we have 9-year-olds already tearing it up on teams.
That's true. Yeah, that's true.
I did want to touch on one of the things you were talking about, which was the replay thing and just Overwatch esports in general. I don't think that this game is at a point yet where Blizzard has done their due diligence on developing it as an esport. Like, this has happened with every other Blizzard game, right? They kind of start and they get the game out, and it's most important to have the game out in the wild and being played and see what kind of takes off at a grassroots level, but they come back later, right? That's what happened with StarCraft. They came back and they worked with the community on better stream interfaces, you know, what kind of tournament rule systems and structures should exist for their leagues. Hearthstone's going through a lot of the same stuff right now. John and I talk about that every couple of weeks with what needs to happen for Hearthstone esports to succeed long term.
Come on.
It's definitely, I think, something that Blizzard is very aware of. And we've seen them do a lot of work in that space, right? We've seen what they've been able to accomplish with things like Heroes of the Dorm. We know that this is something that they have people who are dealing with this every day. And I'm really hopeful that maybe the long term vision here is to have something that's a little bit more unified across the whole Battle.net platform. Maybe that's not out of the question.
Yeah, that would be really nice. I mean, the other issue that I saw, at least on Saturday from watching it at home, was the stream quality was a little rough. I don't know if you guys saw that as well. And I think that's just, it's just going to be growing pains for Overwatch as an esport, as content creators figure out what settings just work well. So we're just going to have to figure that out. It just, when there's a whole lot of action on screen, it just becomes a very pixelated mess. And that was something you just didn't see if you were at the event. So, something to look out for in the future. But other than that, it was a really well done run event, and they had a lot of really strong sponsorship backing them up. So that was really good for a tournament out of the gate here.
Yeah, I totally agree.
For the type of initiative it was, I think they did a phenomenal job, and I'm really excited to see what else happens. I mean, this has definitely got me excited now to see what Blizzard will do at BlizzCon, because I'm very confident that they'll be announcing something right away here for some kind of summer qualifier that will lead up to BlizzCon this fall.
It's got to be. I mean, they've got to announce something, right? Like, they've got to announce something coming for BlizzCon for Overwatch. There's just no way they don't.
Well, so for sake of argument, right? Today is actually the 1-year anniversary of Heroes of the Storm officially launching. And after Heroes was officially out of beta and out in the wild, that was when Blizzard actually started putting together some qualifiers for BlizzCon for Heroes of the Storm. And Heroes of the Storm had a phenomenal showing at BlizzCon last year. I imagine it'll be the same thing. They'll run a couple of small summer invitational tournaments. People can sign up, play through some qualifiers. It'll just be a one and done thing because there's not enough time to run multiple seasons and all that kind of stuff at this point. We're June and BlizzCon's in November. We have 5 months. They don't have time to do more than one season. But that's enough to put something cool together for BlizzCon. It'll just probably land in like August. Hopefully.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that, I think that timeline
mode out first, right?
Right. I think that timeline makes a lot of sense, and it'll be interesting what they end up coming up with, because I do want to, when I'm at BlizzCon this year, I do want to watch some Overwatch as well as Hearthstone. I don't just want to watch Hearthstone the whole time. So it'll be nice to have. All right, let's move on. We gotta hit this last thing before we head out. So with Overwatch now being launched, we wanted to take some time and talk about being a better team player in Overwatch. Because in the end, it's not your fault. We know. It's your teammates' fault. But just so that you know, to tell your teammates how they can be a better player, this segment is for you. So the way that we wanted to kind of organize this is just go chronologically what a match will look like and talk about some best practices and things that you can do to be a better team player, give your team a higher chance of winning, and hopefully making some friends. Because if you are solo queuing, you already know how hard it is to get involved with the team and communicate. But if someone does work well with you, we want to put you in a position where people start exchanging battle tags, and you know, we go from there. So, all right, the hero selection. First things first, you queue up, you're solo queuing, you're Kevin, you're playing all by yourself. So Kevin queues up and he gets into the lobby. Kevin, what are some things that you are looking for to be a better team player?
I mean, I think there's a couple of variables, right? The first thing you should be aware of is that every role in the game is important and you're going to need at some point to be comfortable and flexible playing them all. You might be better or have more raw time put in as a particular character. Like my most played character is Junkrat. I am not actually phenomenally good at Junkrat. He does not have a really strong win rate for me. And quite frequently, part of the reason I'm on Junkrat is because I am by myself, not with an organized team. And I got a whole team full of people who are all bound and determined to play Soldier 76. So it's five Soldier 76s and me on Junkrat. When you get into a game, you need to look around and think about it in terms of making the game work, right? You are in this to make friends, to cooperate, to be a part of a team. The whole point to the game is objective gameplay. So if your team doesn't have a Reinhardt to stand up front or a Winston to dive on a payload, if it doesn't have a Lucio to keep your team alive as they move or a Mercy to help sustain your core damage dealers, you're going to have a bad time. And you're going to have a bad time not because you had to play a healer, but because your team didn't coordinate and put together a viable composition. So do that. Take a look around and figure out what role you can fill in and be comfortable playing them all. I think that's really important. Also, learn the maps. A lot of people don't know the ins and outs of the individual maps yet, and it makes a big difference. If you have an idea going in what you're going to be able to get away with in terms of which heroes are good on which maps, that makes a huge difference as well. And you can actually tell other people those little tips and tricks as well, right? If you know that, for example, Widowmaker is phenomenally good on defense on Temple of Anubis, pass that along so that we know as a team, as a group, this would be a really great map to have a sniper on. If you're going to play support on Ilios, maybe think about playing Lucio because you can skate back out of that stupid well in the middle of the map, which I have done and is hilarious. Like, think about those kinds of little things and don't just keep them to yourself. Share them with your friends in the community. It's good for everyone if you pass that kind of stuff along. That's, I guess, those are the big ones for me. Jimmy, what would you add?
Yeah, just being being aware of what teams, that's perfect. Yes, being aware,
being attentive.
That's all you need. No, but Kevin's right. Just knowing what roles need to be filled in and what the map requires. I mean, some heroes are just really good on certain maps versus others. Like, really, Pharah is exceptionally good on King's Row, and I feel like she's not nearly as good on pretty much every other map. King's Row just is a very vertical map, and you're able to get into the position that that kind of hero requires. But yeah, hero selection is obviously super, super important. Being patient with people, especially as this is only the second week of the game coming out, is important as well. Communicating, I find a lot of people are very quiet on this game, surprisingly. If you're not comfortable using your voice, just type some things out and see if you can get the team to kind of go along with it. I find a lot of the problem being that people respawn and they immediately go for the capture point. Just saying something like, oh, wait for me, or meet up on this hero, that can be enough to get people to group up and go in as a complete unit. So instead of going in 4v6, 2v5, whatever, you're going in with a full six-man roster there.
Yeah.
Night and day difference if you do that, too. I mean, if you, whether it's chat or voice communications, like the first time you actually have a team where somebody says, okay, yeah, I'll switch to Winston because we got to get back on the payload. We've only got 30 seconds left. And your Lucio says, okay, yeah, I'm coming back to speed boost everybody. My ultimate's ready. I'll use it when everybody's in line of sight. And you go in and you actually pull off a coordinated attack. Like, it's, that's what the game is. That's when you have the most fun. Win or lose, those scary overtime coordinated battles where both teams are 99% of the way there. That's what makes this game so much fun.
Something I would add. Sorry, go ahead.
Sorry,
go
one,
ahead,
Jimmy. One more thing I've really noticed is I'm particularly bad about this. I am very hesitant to move off a hero that either is very close to having the ultimate charged up or already has the ultimate charged up. But sometimes you quite frankly need to do that and just assess the situation and be like, okay, we actually need this hero instead of what I'm playing currently. John?
Yeah. I mean, the only thing that I would add is if I could say, cause you know, Kevin's totally right. Know every hero. At the very least, know at least one of each role to go in the best you can, because the ability to say, well, I can't play all tanks and, you know, Roadhog would be best right now, but I can't, but I'm an okay Reinhardt, you know, like that's better than no tank. And so know at least one of every role. And I would say really look at what your team's composition is and learn the synergies between the different ones. And if you see one, you know, where you can have multiple, you know, synergies, like I always look for, if I see a McCree or a Pharah as a healer, I want to be a Mercy as much as I can, because that damage boost is insane. Or if I'm playing in the game, let's say I'm playing as Lucio and I see that our McCree is, you know, doing really great work and, you know, is getting stuff done, I might switch over to a Mercy just to give him that damage boost. And that can be what can take the team there. So, you know, choose heroes. Obviously at some point you've got to experiment, and it's just not realistic to only get to experiment and play new heroes with your friends. Like, you've got to do that sometime and say, hey, I haven't played this one before, but also like the heads up of like, hey, I haven't played this before. And if your team starts losing and you can tell people are getting frustrated, even switch off that and go back to a hero you're more comfortable with.
Well, and bear in mind too, as you're learning the game, there are characters I think that are easier than others as you're learning each role as well. If you've never played a tank before, or you're trying to get started as a tank, I would say play Reinhardt because he requires the least awareness of like complex aim for verticality and movement. The shield is a super important thing. Like you are never walking out the front door on Dorado without a Reinhardt. It's just not going to happen. If you're learning to play support, play Lucio, because you don't have to worry about constantly switching targets. You don't have to necessarily be able to manipulate the like flight of Mercy or the constant orb changing of Zenyatta. You just have to stay near your team and keep them alive. And it's much easier to start out with stuff like that and then graduate to the characters that have more nuanced roles as you come to understand them.
And as a bonus, competitively, those are two actually very competitive heroes, where it's like, if you're learning Symmetra, you know, that's great. Or if you're playing Symmetra and you don't know and it's complicated and things like that, you can switch to a Lucio and a Mercy or a Mercy and know that they're going to be contributing a lot because everybody is running one of those. And so that's kind of huge too. All right, so let's jump into communication. So we were kind of talking about earlier how it's great to be like, I'm going in by myself and I'm doing, let's be honest, not everybody has mics, not everyone's talking, and you don't always have the time to type. So communicating is still going to be really important. I would say pregame more than anything, like, hey, what's the plan? How do we want to do this? Especially if there's no mic communication. I think microphone communication kind of goes without saying, but I think especially like I've got some of the different auto chat responses, like, you know, let's go for the payload or control the point. I've got those key bound on my one through, or not my one, my F keys. So I can quickly go up and, you know, hit those things so that the team knows what I'm intending on doing and what I think we should do. And even that alone has helped me a lot. And it's also made me some friends too, where they're like, I really appreciated that even though we weren't on mic, you were constantly letting us know what you were doing. Even if the other four people ignored you, I saw you and I was trying to stay on the same page with you. So what else?
Yeah. I mean, I think you hit a lot of the big ones. I also really like to use the emote commands and really quickly let people know where my ultimate charge is at. I always try to make sure that I'm communicating that, because I think that helps people understand when there's going to be a timing window where you can make a big play happen. particularly if you are playing as a character that has one of the ults that isn't an independent ability. Like if I'm playing as, well, I was going to say Widowmaker, right? I pop my ult. I can just do that anytime and it's useful anytime. And you don't have to wait and coordinate it with your team because really is significant. But something like Zarya, right? Or Lucio or any of the other characters where you're trying to set up a play that affects your whole team. Communicate that so that people know, right? And I'm constantly spamming that so I can tell people like, okay, this is it. I'm at 99%. You guys need to group up on me. It's go time. And then I try as best I can to position myself to take advantage of that. But if people don't know, if you haven't been telling them, then they also have no ability to try and reposition themselves either. So it's a lot of it just comes down to, are you giving your teammates the information they need to make their own decisions?
Right. Okay. Well, let's talk about playing the game. And I think more than anything, what I really wanted to talk about here is awareness. What are you looking toward? What are you looking for when you're playing to make sure that you're being, you know, a good team player? And how are you positioning yourself and things like that? And that kind of answers it in itself, right? Like if you're off by yourself and you're, you know, a mercy, like you're doing it wrong, you know, Reaper, I'm trying to think who are like the really good ones that can just kind of go off on their own. Reaper,
McCree, Genji, Tracer,
any of the flankers, even McCree sometimes can't because he doesn't have a lot of mobility to kind of get out. Whereas, you know, the rest of those heroes are, but a good McCree for sure, you know, McCree can just kill everything. So they don't really need mobility, I guess. So that's kind of the thing.
Well, they can take duels, right? Any character that is an effective duelist and can fight 1v1 can go and they can do that. They can go and try to flank. I would say, like, we're talking about awareness, you know, and being aware of what's going on in the game. I would say the biggest one is, even if you're not going to shot call, even if you're not going to try to communicate the details of your ult timing to your teammates, if you're just going to try to play the best game you can, something you as an individual can do that will make a huge difference is turn on the kill feed and take a good look at it. When you see the kill feed and three of your teammates just died, or even if you just see the skulls on the screen in front of you and realize, all right, we just lost people. Simple math says you're not going to win a fight down, you know, a third or half of your team. If you go in 4v6 against your opponents, doesn't matter what the situation is, you're going to lose. And one of the things that holds true in all team games, it's a very common thing to hear when you learn to play MOBAs like Heroes of the Storm or League, is when you're dead, you've done your team a disservice. And that's the timing window, right? When you kill an opponent, that's when you get on the payload and push it. You don't try to push the payload while you're fighting 6v6. You push the payload when you create a window of opportunity, which occurs when someone has died. So if your teammates are dead, that's when you need to retreat. And it's better for you to stay alive, make an informed decision, and wait for your teammates to come back. Because if your opponents were going to win the game in the next 5 seconds while your teammates are respawning, you've already lost. If you can give up, you know, capture point A on Hanamura and regroup with your team and set up a new defensive position outside of B, that's way better than you running into A, dying, and then they still capture it and you're in exactly the same position, but set back even further in terms of time and coordination and the ability for your team to actually get in position to build their new defense. A lot of it's just situational awareness, and nothing is more frustrating. You as a player know this, right? You constantly see this where you're, all right, I'm going to wait, I'm going to be smart, and then off goes that Soldier 76 running up around the outside. He's going to go do it by himself. And 4 seconds later, his name comes up on the kill feed and you're like, well, now what? Right. See it. It frustrates you when you see it. Don't be that person. don't go do it.
Something too, I would say is, overtime timers are meant to be reset. So once you hit that overtime timer, get on it. There's still a good chance. There are so many times and so many rounds where we thought it was over. And on both defense and offense, we're like, oh, they'll never get it back. And then they make an amazing push and, you know, they end up getting the point for the round or vice versa. We didn't think that we were going to get it. And we just make a push, do everything we can to get in there. And you know, we find a way to eke it out. It's just like when you're playing competitively, you know, don't concede in Hearthstone. Unless you know beyond all doubts that you're done, you see lethal on board, whatever. But even then, like you don't normally do that. It's like seeing Lethal yeah. on board, you know, especially if it's a game that matters, you make them find it, make the team win or lose is kind of the thing that I would say to kind of wrap up the game. You know, always hit it. Don't sit back in the little rocket ship because, you'll never get there. Don't be that guy. Don't be like Kevin.
Never surrender.
I am the opposite of that, sir. I'm the one who, because I played too much Junkrat, I run in and I ult and I blow myself and four other people up on top of the payload to delay them and hopefully end in overtime. Because at that point, it doesn't matter. You just got to do whatever you can with the time you have left. It's some Gandalf level wisdom up in here.
Yeah. All right. All right. So last thing, post game. And I thought this was actually kind of interesting because I don't see a lot of people talking about this, but post game, what's good etiquette? How do you become a better team player post game? Jimmy, what do you do?
You vote for the person you think deserves those upvotes at the end. Although I'll be honest, if I'm in a group, which is 99% of the time in this game, I probably will go towards one of the group members. But yeah, saying GG well played, I mean, it's very basic etiquette. I think that's something that's really important, though. And I even when I'm tilted and angry, I still really try to just say GG well played. And it's just fun to talk about the play of the game with the whole entire group at the end, which is kind of fun. Unless you're playing with JR, because then it's literally just a dwarf walking down a hallway, which is the dumbest thing on the planet.
His Torbjorn plays of the game are the funniest things I've ever seen.
Dude, we seriously need a montage of those. I'm sorry, but it's literally just Torbjorn walking down a hallway after respawning or something like that. It's so silly.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really funny. Something I would say too is unless you really think that you are the best player on the team, don't vote for yourself. It's just kind of bad taste. Like, unless you are the best person on the team, don't vote for yourself. Don't be that guy. Give it to the person who really deserved it. I'm a big believer in that one. What else, Kev?
I mean, I would say make a point of, especially if you're going to be with the same team again, like if you're going to stick in the lobby or you're going to group up with some people, make a point of thanking the people who played the support and tank roles, because quite often they're doing that because no one else would. So just give them a nod for that or volunteer to do it for the next game. Say, look, hey, I know you played Mercy for us this round. I'll take care of it. I'm going to jump onto Zenyatta for this next one. Don't worry about it. Stuff like that is really great. And it should be really obvious. But if you had a bad game or you're frustrated or you're upset because you got sniped 3 times in a row in the head or something else just didn't go to plan in a game, walk away, take a break, go pour yourself a fresh drink, get a little fresh air real fast. Just do something so that you're not sitting there and seething about it and then jumping right into the next game, because I think that
and lose, you know, that consecutive game bonus.
Well, we talk about tilt and we talk about people getting, you know, frustrated, but we don't really ever give people a good solution to it other than to say stop playing. And I don't think you have to stop playing. I think most people, if you go do a couple of push-ups or go pour yourself a glass of water or just walk outside and get a little sunlight and come back, like your mentality changes because you concentrate on something else, even if it's only for 30 seconds, and you feel a lot better. And that makes a huge difference to enjoying the game, right? Play with your friends. Do it for fun. Winning and losing is a byproduct of whether you're having fun or not. And if you're not having fun, it's not because you're losing. You're losing because you're not having fun.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's it. Is there anything else we need to add to this guy here? Or are we all better players? Are we better team players? Kevin, are you a better... Say that you are a better team player.
I am a better team player.
All right. Become a better person. It's different. Different. Master disguise. Great one. And it's another person. But anyways, we got to get out of here, I think. And this is a fun show. It's post-launch. We'll have stuff to talk about every week now, which is kind of cool. It's not the launch celebration week. This is like a normal week, what it'll look like for talking about Overwatch. So, yeah, chat, say it too. Say you're a better team player. I love it. Everybody. We'll make that the raffle thing for the Origins thing after the show. Well, thank you guys so much for hanging out for episode number 25 of The Payload. we really appreciate it. This was a really fun week, and it's fun to finally see the game be launched and actually talk about a game that's live and consistent, and you don't have to worry about stats being wiped and all that kind of stuff. Katie just swore in the other room. I love it. Unbelievable. I think we got some iTunes reviews this week. Did we not, Kev?
We sure did. We have three new reviews that we're very thankful for here on the payload from Canada. Oh my goodness. It's Takamakazuch. I think maybe looks vaguely Japanese. I apologize if it's not. From the USA, we'd like to thank El Gluer and E. Simmons. Those 5-star reviews are a big deal, guys. They really help us get in front of a new audience, reach out to people who want to learn more about games and Overwatch, and hang out and just enjoy what it is that we're trying to do for you guys. So if you appreciate the show and you want to help us do a better job of getting out there in front of a bigger audience, that's the best way you can do it.
Absolutely. Shout outs. Oh, wait, before, if you have thoughts about the show, have questions, anything, send us your email to thepayload@blizzpro.com so we can answer them on the show. We don't know what news and stuff is going to look like. And if it's slow, we definitely want to hear your questions.
Even if it's not slow, if you've got a great question, we're always more excited to talk about what you guys want to hear about than anything else.
But only great questions, only great ones. Let's do shout out
a better team player, know, John. Right?
Let's do some shout outs for the week. Jimmy, you first.
Yeah, so I actually got some really good news shortly before we went on air that my panel for TwitchCon got accepted. So Woo. I will be presenting a panel at so TwitchCon cool. About podcasting and using Twitch as a platform for that. So I'm super excited for that. I'm still getting together who else is going to be on the panel with me. But wow, I did not expect this to happen, but I am super excited for it and happy to be representing BlizzPro and Payload at the TwitchCon this year.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Hashtag stay tight.
Exactly.
I'm actually going to try to make it. I'm really going to try to go to TwitchCon this year. So that'd be really cool. What about you, Kev?
It's going to be just a regular week this week for me. No crazy travel. I'll actually be leaving next week. Won't affect the payload. I'll be here for all the episodes of the payload, but I will miss next week's Well Met. I'm going to be off speaking at the Canadian Gaming Summit, talking to regulators from all over the country. So that'll be kind of a cool little deal. In the meantime, though, going to be playing lots of Heroes of the Storm during this celebration of the anniversary of the game. If you are a player of the game and you want to get into it, now's a really good time. There is an experience bonus right now and special portraits and stuff for the event as well. With the end of preseason coming up here in like 2 weeks, this is a really great chance for you to unlock the cool rewards that are going to exist specifically for having played before the first ranked play season goes live. So if you're into Heroes of the Storm at all, jump in there. And if you need somebody to play with, come find me on Twitter at Lack of Realism.
Awesome. As for me, doing some streaming. I'm thinking I'm gonna stream tonight. I'm not really sure. Are we gonna play some Overwatch after this? Are we gonna do that?
I
thing?
Want to.
All right. I guess
we should. I guess
we're gonna do it. So we're gonna be doing some post stream. I stream over at twitch.tv/kickedtripod, and yeah, I'm gonna be doing a lot of that, and that's about it. Whew. Well, I think we can get out of here then. So you can find more Overwatch stuff throughout the week at overwatch.blizzbro.com. Big thanks to Jake Buttono at jakebuttono.ca for his awesome music. And of course, sitedesigns.com for our logo. You can find us on Twitch at Payload Podcast or send us your emails to thepayload@blizzbro.com. You can also send us your wonderful iTunes reviews, preferably 5-star. Those are the best. We really appreciate those. And of course, find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Podcast Addict, Google Podcasts, basically everywhere. We're everywhere. If you've got a favorite podcast player, we're there, or we should be there. And if we're not, tweet at us and I will make sure to get it on there. Well, guys, this has been episode number 25. 25 whole episodes, halfway to 50. We'll see you next week. Bye.
The Payload is a production of BlizzPro. Find out more about Overwatch at overwatch.blizzpro.com. You can find your host throughout the week on social media. Find Jimmy on Twitter at DJ Tyrant, Kevin on Twitter at Lack of Realism, and John on Twitter at Kicked Tripod.